You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Tuesday episode, Rob Rang. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Rob, given our teaching backgrounds, probably not a surprise to our listeners, but it's safe to say you and I both have soft spots for redemption stories. I've worked with many students during my time in the classroom that came from difficult circumstances and were able to make something out of themselves. And Bruce Irvin most certainly is one of those redemption stories.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I remember when the Seahawks drafted him. I mean, just what a media firestorm there was. I mean, this was Seattle's first draft pick, you know, Pete Carroll and John Schneider, and they're going for a player that not only had off-field concerns, that there were a lot of people questioned about where he would fit in with Seattle's scheme. Never mind the fact that after he was drafted that he wound up, you know, having a very successful rookie season. I think it was 8 sacks as a rookie, so roughly double the what Seattle's top sack guy had last year. But as you mentioned, Corbin, I mean, the redemption story. I mean, this was a player who the off-field concerns about him were very real. Had some conversations with scouts, and they were referring to things like he could have played, I mean, almost a quote, he could have played a role in The Wire, which was, of course, an HBO show back in the day about drugs and gangs and violence and all these different types of things. And when Seattle lost him in free agency, to me, it was very similar to Steve Hutchinson. And I thought that he was not only one of your better players, he was one of your tough guys, one of the guys in your locker room that you really wanted to have on your side. And to see him come back, to see him be the mature and well-spoken man that he has become after all those red flags early on, redemption story, I think, is a good way of putting it.
Yeah, his story has been an incredible one because he did serve time when he was in high school. In college, he was in trouble a bunch. There were a lot of red flags about, as you mentioned, potentially being involved in selling drugs. And when he first entered the league, it was one of those situations where his landing spot and the people that were surrounding him were going to dictate which direction he ended up going. And luckily, in Seattle, you not only had a very supportive coach in Pete Carroll, you had a defensive coordinator, actually at that time, linebacker coach in Ken Norton Jr., that became a father figure for Bruce Irvin. And that was really the first big thing. He had Ken Norton Jr. there, and those two still remain extremely close. One of the reasons he was so excited to come back to Seattle, now that Norton Jr. is the defensive coordinator, those two have a very close relationship. And he also had several veteran leaders on the roster that he could learn how to become a professional from. You had Red Bryant, Chris Clemens, Brandon Mebane. Later in his career, you had Michael Bennett, you had Cliff Averill, a number of veterans that had been through the rigors of an NFL season, knew what it took to be successful on and off the field, and he was able to learn a lot from those guys. And by the time he was leaving Seattle, as he mentioned to us in our interview with him yesterday, by that point he was already starting to become a more vocal leader that was willing to speak out when he thought teammates weren't giving maximum effort or they weren't taking their job seriously. And he also would pat him on the back when they deserved it. And so now, 4 years later, after pit stops in Atlanta, Carolina, and of course Oakland, where he originally signed in free agency, now he's joining the Seahawks again. And this is a great opportunity for him to really turn the tables here and take over as a mentor on this team. And I thought it was funny that yesterday he said they are calling him the OG in the locker room. And that kind of made me feel old because it doesn't feel like it was that long ago that Bruce Irvin was that criticized first-round pick.
Yeah, I mean, talking about OG, I mean, and making people feel old. I'm right there with you, brother. I mean, but that is truly what is so cool about the Bruce Irvin story. I mean, just remove the Seahawks for a moment. I mean, it's just the fact that you had somebody who obviously had some difficulties, some challenges early on in life, and has figured things out, has matured, and that's one of the things as a teacher, as you mentioned, you and I both have that background. That is one of the more rewarding things things about the profession. And then if we are going to focus specifically on the Seahawks, you know, of course, there's been so many times that the Seahawks have been one of those teams who have been willing to roll the dice on some character concerns. And while people love to mention names like Malik McDowell, they don't mention often enough the recovery efforts that have happened with some of the other players who the Seahawks have brought in during the John Schneider and Pete Carroll era and have wound up becoming not only great players and great men in terms of the Seahawks and in the locker room, but in terms of the greater Seattle community. And for Seattle to bring Bruce Irvin back, for Bruce Irvin to want to come back, to me, is just an indication of all of the great things that have been going on at the VMAC for all of these years.
I think the quote that really jumped out to me yesterday, and I believe it was Greg Bell, the Tacoma News Tribune, that ended up asking him this question. It just kind of came down to where he was at this point in his career and in his life. And he said, this version of B.I., this version of Bruce Irvin, his why is about his family. It's about his wife. It's about his children. It's about generational wealth. When he came into the league, he said, my why was about, you know, buying sports cars and stuff like that. And he said, there are still players out there that are his age, 31, 32, 33, as he mentioned, out chasing women still. He says, I am in a much different spot. So again, being on the other side of the coin here, being a reporter that has covered him for a long time, just seeing where he is at now, that is a testament to him as a person, but it is also a testament to this organization, because I think he would be the first to tell, he's already said this with Ken Norton Jr., without having the support system that he had when he came into Seattle, easily could have gone down another road, which would have been really bad news for a talented young man that has ended up becoming one heck of a human being.
He really has. And that's the thing, is that, you know, you and I can sit here and just laud Bruce Irvin's personal character. And that's fun to do, because just knowing the kind of background that he grew up in. But of course, maybe a lot of our listeners who all they care about is football. And that's a fun thing, talking about Bruce Irvin as well, because you were talking about a guy who at 250 pounds was running in the 4.4s, low 4.5s, you know, and when you have that type of athletic ability, then it's really easy to be known as a speed guy and a flashy guy. But the physicality, the toughness that he demonstrated, as I mentioned before with Steve Hutchinson, and what a loss I thought that when Seattle lost him, I thought it was very similar when Seattle lost Bruce Irvin, because he was one of the guys who at 6'3", 250 pounds, could set the edge, that he could play outside the strong side linebacker position. He could drop down and play that defensive end role. He did basically everything that Seattle asked and did it very, very well. And that's one of the reasons why he's had so much success, not only in Seattle, but in his other stops, as you mentioned before.
And he's still a darn good player. If you've been at the training camp practices, he's still moving. If he's lost a step, it's not much. He's still a very explosive athlete. He's going to give them some really valuable reps at linebacker and rushing off the edge in pass rushing situations at the Leo defensive end spot. And as I mentioned, being a mentor, he has now taken that role that Chris Clemens and Cliff Averill and all those guys had when they were mentoring him when he first came in the league. And now he's taking players like Alton Robinson and Shaquem Griffin under his wing. He name dropped both of those players yesterday. He and Griffin have been together basically in every drill because they have the same positional versatility. They both rush in situational, like third down situations, third and long, second and long. Those two have incredible speed off the edge. So they're doing a lot of work with the defensive line, and they're also obviously getting plenty of reps at linebacker as well. And Irvin, at his size, he's been able to also work plenty with Robinson, who's a player that has really impressed him in his first couple weeks of the team. And given his background, how good of a player he's been through his career, for him to have the praise that he had for both those players, he's a guy that will be critical of you if he needs to be. So I don't think he was being superficial there. I think he clearly is very impressed with some of these young guys, and now he's looking to do what some of those players did for him when he came into the league. And that's exciting for this pass rush going into this season. It's another reason that I expect, even without Jadeveon Clowney, that this group has a chance to be much more productive than last year when you look at the sum of all their parts. When we come back for the second quarter, it's Throwback Tuesday. We're going to look at a statistical anomaly from a prior Seahawks game. And honestly, Rob, it's a fitting one given today's practice at the VMAC. We're going to go back to the mid-1980s. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Crushing it at work or attempting to beat that impossible boss level on the latest video game? Even in these uncertain times, everyone has to eat, so why not take advantage of DoorDash to get takeout from your favorite restaurant? If I'm craving pizza, which is basically every day, and my girlfriend is craving sushi, there's something for both of us on DoorDash. Ordering is quick and easy with the DoorDash app, allowing you to support your favorite restaurants safely. With over 300,000 partners in the US, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or your favorite national restaurants like Papa Murphy's and the Cheesecake Factory. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDON. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDON. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDON for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "locked in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. It's Throwback Tuesday. Rob, the last couple weeks, we've been looking at statistical anomalies in Seahawks history. We had a ton of fun with the first one when we discussed the Seahawks' improbable win over the Chiefs on a day where Derek Thomas sacked Dave Craig seven times. Then last week, we revisited the Fail Mary over the Packers, but we were looking for different reasons. We were looking back at Chris Clemens' record pass rushing performance with four sacks on Aaron Rodgers that day. They got a couple other outstanding performances getting after Green Bay's star quarterback. Considering how practice went today, again, I can't delve into all the details because of some of the restrictions that have been placed on Seahawks media members, but it's only fitting that we switch over to the offensive side of the ball for our latest anomaly. And if you're a fantasy football player, I know a lot of our listeners are always asking questions about fantasy. And honestly, I don't even play anymore. Not really my thing. But back in 1985, wasn't necessarily something a lot of people were doing. You had a handful of people that were kind of starting what has become now a huge industry that is fantasy football. But on this particular day, Darryl Turner would have been a player who could have won the game for you single-handedly in fantasy. He had that kind of a dominant performance.
He really did. I mean, it is the greatest performance from a Seahawks wide receiver in franchise history. He had four receiving touchdowns. And oh, by the way, it happened to be over a division rival in the San Diego Chargers. And you know, there are a lot of fantasy football listeners in our audience, Corbin. So I think that you did a great job of kind of leading up to this game, because if you were a fantasy football owner who happened to have Darryl Turner on your roster, then you were feeling really good. You were feeling really good as well if you had Dave Craig, who, of course, we talked about so many times with the Seahawks, one of our 100 greatest Seahawks of all time, who threw for five touchdowns in that game without a single interception. And oh, by the way, Dan Fouts, future Hall of Famer that he is, 440 yards against the Seahawks, four touchdowns, but he also had an interception, and the Chargers themselves had plenty of turnovers in that game. So yeah, to me, this is a game that I remember because of just the offensive explosion. I mean, there was just so much scoring going on. The final in this game was 49-35 Seahawks. And what was that much more remarkable about it, Corbin, is that the Seahawks went into halftime down by double digits.
Yeah, that's what's crazy about this game. When you look back at it, the Seahawks ended up winning by a couple of scores, but in the first half, the Chargers actually had a 23-14 lead going into halftime at home. It seemed like they were well in control of this contest. Now, Darryl Turner did get on the scoreboard in that first half. He had a touchdown in the first two quarters. But Dan Fouts was really the one that was owning the first two periods, had several touchdown passes to give the Chargers a nice little early lead. And as you mentioned, he finished with 440 passing yards and four touchdowns. That is normally more than good enough production to win a football game. But on this particular day, this was just one of those crazy games where things just snowballed on the Chargers. Because if you look at the box score, the Chargers scored 10 points the first quarter. They had 13 the second. The Seahawks had 7 in each of the quarters. So at that point, it looked like the Chargers were going to be able to hold off their division rivals. And then the third quarter comes around, and real quickly, Dave Craig hits Steve Largent for a 6-yard touchdown. The Chargers strike right back. It's 29-21. And from there, the Seahawks score 3 more touchdowns in the third quarter alone. They outscored the opponent 28-6. And I have to laugh looking at that 6, because the Chargers kicker missed 3 extra points in this game alone. And this was well before they moved the extra point back, which only has happened a few years ago. This was the traditional length of extra point, and he missed 3 of them, which certainly does not look good on the box score. But nonetheless, the Seahawks absolutely dominated that quarter, and Turner scored 2 of those final 3 touchdowns. He had a 15-yard reception in the end zone and also scored a 30-yard touchdown coming from Craig. And suddenly, it's 35-29. Kurt Warner plunges in the end zone moments later. It's 42-29. Darrell Turner then strikes again in the fourth quarter and scores his 4th touchdown, setting a franchise record. And now it is a 20-point deficit for the home team. So it went from being a fairly comfortable halftime lead for the Chargers to suddenly they are getting blown out in their own building. It was just a barrage of knockout punches in the third quarter.
Yeah, and it was kind of like what we talked about in the first 2 weeks in both of those games going against the Chiefs, who, of course, were division rivals at that time. And this being the San Diego Chargers, these were two teams who were pretty darn good during that era, as I mentioned, with the future Hall of Famer in Dan Fouts. And then the Chargers had another one in Charlie Joyner. Of course, the Seahawks had arguably the greatest wide receiver of all time in number 80 and Steve Largent, who also had a strong game, 6 catches for 99 yards and one of his 100 touchdowns over his career. But it was Darrell Turner who clearly was the superstar on this day, 7 catches for 121 yards, but 4 touchdowns. And that was one of the remarkable things about Darrell the Burner Turner, is he was so well known for that straight line speed. It was one of the reasons why he was a second round pick when he was by Seattle. But he was just so efficient. I mean, his ability to score touchdowns is one of the things that really separates him. And it, to me, made this game an interesting one, because even if you were an offensive guy, like Don Coryell, what was the head coach of the Chargers during that time, his offense and his innovation is famous. But if you were a defensive minded coach like a Pete Carroll, you might be watching the game like this and thinking, hey, can you win the game in the first quarter, and all that kind of stuff, because it was the second half when Seattle wound up taking this game over on the road, as you mentioned before. And it was a game that Seattle dominated in so many different facets, except some of the different ways that the analytical crowd will look at things. Seattle actually had less first downs. They dominated in the running game. Oh, maybe that's important. 40 rushes for 196 yards and 2 touchdowns. The Chargers, meanwhile, had 19 rushes for just 63 yards. And most importantly, as I mentioned before, the Chargers had 4 turnovers. The Seahawks had 0. And that's why they were able to go into San Diego and beat a very talented team, basically, as we talked about, by double digits at the end.
And this is why more traditional statistics like total passing yards and total yards are only part of the picture. Because if you look at this game in particular, the Chargers had 494 net passing yards. The Seahawks had 293. So the Chargers killed them in that category, but the Seahawks were much more productive and efficient running the football in this game. And the turnovers are really what loomed large. And several of those came in the second half as things really started to spiral out of control. And the way the Seahawks offense was humming, you give them a few extra possessions, you're going to find yourself 2 or 3 scores behind. And that's exactly what happened. Kind of combing through the box score real quick, because I love looking back at these classic games. And Darrell Turner had an amazing game, but I want to give a shout out to Wes Chandler on the Chargers. 13 receptions for 243 yards in this game. Over half of Dan Fouts' passing yards went to Wes Chandler. Obviously, Charlie Joyner was a stud, 74 receiving yards and two touchdowns in this game. But this game was all about Wes Chandler with over 240 receiving yards. So both these teams just had absurd statistics. And really what it came down to was one team protected the football. The other one, even though they were getting a lot of yardage, they did not.
Exactly. And that's why I thought that it was so fun the way that you described the game, is because for our fantasy football enthusiasts, this would have been a game that you would have loved to have had a couple of these players, because whether it be on the Charger side, whether it be on the Seahawks side, you certainly would have scored enough points, which is fun, because for those of us who were able to watch a little bit of practice, then we had an offensive showdown a little bit today during the Seahawks training camp as well.
And that's a perfect segue going into the third quarter, because we just talked about a classic game with a lot of offense. After the defense dominated in yesterday's Monday session, offense struck back a little bit today at the VMAC. We're going to share some observations from the 11th practice of training camp. Hard to believe I'm saying that. We're already to practice number 11, and less than 3 weeks remain until the start of the regular season. But we'll break down some observations from a very situation-heavy practice in Renton. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with Menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're offering all of our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code LOCKEDONNFL at checkout. Once again, it's CBDMD.com, promo code LOCKEDONNFL for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD.
Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on our Tuesday episode of Locked On Seahawks. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. With me, as always, Rob Rang. The Seahawks were back on the practice field today, back in pads. Yesterday's practice, just helmets and jerseys on. They were trying to keep guys healthy. We're seeing a lot of veterans getting off days, Dwayne Brown being one of them again today that did not actually practice. They're doing everything they can to keep him fresh. He's in great shape. Been through the rigors of training camp, just getting ready for the start of the regular season. But this was another pretty physical practice, and it was really interesting because the bulk of the practice today, there's obviously a scrimmage coming up tomorrow at CenturyLink Field. Hopefully this time they'll be able to play the entire scrimmage, all four quarters worth. But they ran a lot of situational periods today. Most notably, they had a ton of reps in the red zone. So these are the kind of things that you start to see teams really start to clean up when they get deeper into training camp and normally deeper into the preseason. Usually they start off with more generic, just general, let's run some plays, and then they really start to pick up and clean up on things on their situational football. And today it was all about situations.
Well, exactly. And I think that that just shows the experience of Seattle's coaching staff, and Pete Carroll specifically. I remember watching a couple of days ago when Pete Carroll was kind of talking about how when they start having these games, they're actually going to be at CenturyLink rather than at the VMAC, that they wanted to dedicate a lot of time just to what does it look like when you actually arrive at the game? What does it look like in the actual locker room at CenturyLink rather than at the VMAC? All of these different things, because of course you do have some new players. And so to me, the focusing in on the things that are very, very real to the actual game day performance is critical. And it's almost like what we just talked about during the second quarter with Daryl Turner. All of the talk about, you know, what the Chargers receivers did or who had the most receiving yards and all this kind of stuff, none of that actually mattered. Who scores touchdowns? And so that to me was one of the big things for Seattle here is offensively, defensively, special teams wise as well. Let's focus in on the red zone. Let's focus in on where actual the points are being scored, and who are the difference makers? Who are the guys who are getting are making the plays in those type of situations, rather than the players who are maybe getting some, I wouldn't say meaningless statistics, but certainly not as important as when you're in the critical situations.
Let's talk defense here first, because there were still some good plays by the defense. I don't want our listeners to think this was just a day where the offense was just racking up touchdowns left and right. They did score a lot of points, but it does help when you are inside the 20-yard line. In some of the red zone period, they were inside the 5. And so you're expected to score in those situations. But Jamal Adams, everybody was a little bit concerned because Adams had a heavy bandage on his left hand, and so there's plenty of speculation. We don't know what the injury is specifically, but he was out there practicing, and it really didn't seem to impact his game at all. He was still dominating during their scrimmage periods, the energy that he brings, even when the offense, and Brian Schottenheimer talked about this morning, the offense makes a big play. He's celebrating that too. Obviously, he wants to win every snap. He's an extremely competitive player, but at the same time, when he gets bested by the other side, he's going to give him credit. It's his teammate. They're going to celebrate. Then he's going to come back and talk trash when he makes a play the next time. And that's something that he's been doing consistently. And again, today, it hasn't seemed to matter who's in on the offensive line, when he does it. But whenever Jamal Adams wants to blitz, he's getting to Russell Wilson. It is happening every time. And he's just, like I've said so many times on this show since this trade was made last month, he just has that innate ability to be able to get free and find his way into the backfield. He's just an outstanding blitzer, and he put it on display again, getting to Russell Wilson today on what would have been a sack. He obviously is not allowed to hit him during practice, but this has just been something that Pete Carroll as well as Schottenheimer have just been extremely impressed with. And Schottenheimer mentioned it, just the fact he's so darn instinctive and he's so good at disguising what he's going to do. That is really the secret to why he is such a great blitzer, is he's so good at disguising his intentions play after play. And you add in his physical tools to go with that football intellect, that's what makes a special player.
It really is. We started talking about today's show, talking about guys like Bruce Irvin, you know, 4'4", 250 pounds, absolutely ridiculous. And Daryl Turner, 4.5s, when he was 250 pounds and was trying to work his way back into the league, when running 4.3s, low 4.4s, when he was in shape early in his collegiate and certainly early on with the Seahawks. Some guys just have that incredible straight line speed. Jamal Adams has that, and that's why he ran 4.3s, during his pre-draft focus, why he was number 6 overall by the New York Jets, and is a 2-time All-Pro, all of those things. But you said the word, Corbin, instincts. When you not only have straight line speed, but you're made even faster because of your anticipatory skills, that you're anticipating what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen before it even happens, and you're already running the way that, you know, towards the ball. I mean, we did that interview with Lofa Tatupu. He was one of the best I've ever seen in that. Jamal Adams is that exact same way. Seahawks fans, if you're listening to this, Jamal Adams is the real deal. We're not trying to hype you up. This guy is legitimate, and he makes Seattle an absolute Super Bowl contender, number 33 on the defensive side. Of course, number 3 on the offensive side does that as well.
Yeah, the number 3, just in general, that's going to be key to the Seahawks' chances of winning the Super Bowl, both on offense and on defense. A couple other players I want to call out that during the open period did some nice things today. Jordan Brooks, haven't had a chance to talk about him very much, but he had a nice blitz off the edge where DJ Dallas came up and blocked him, but he got his hands up and he swatted Russell Wilson's pass away. Drew a bunch of applause from the coaching staff, teammates surrounding him. So you can see the confidence starting to build for the first round pick. And every practice seems like he's starting to do just a little bit more. And so that's an exciting development for this Seahawks defense. Another guy with great speed that you can get out there that can chase people down. And he's a really sound tackler as well. And welcome back, Puna Ford. There were several plays today where we've talked time and time again about his quickness at 300 pounds. very few defensive tackles have the lateral quickness that Puna Ford brings to the table. And that's one of the reasons that he has been so successful as an undrafted, former undrafted free agent out of Texas. And he had a couple plays where he was able to spread the run out wide and he's right there waiting for you. And that incredible lateral ability to play the football down the line and be an effective tackler, it was on display again today. They are just a different defense when he's out there, especially with Jaren Reed.
Exactly. I mean, Puna Ford is one of those guys who's just a disruptor. And as we were just talking about, the guys who have great speed, great athletic ability, and as well as are instinctive football players, if Puna Ford was 6'3 rather than 5'11, then he probably wouldn't have been a first or second round pick. He certainly would have had that type of production at Texas going against, you know, quality competition. And I gave him a fifth round grade. I could not believe that he actually went undrafted. I thought, okay, he's 5'11. He's going to fall into the late rounds, but no one is actually going to let him go into undrafted free agency where it's basically a free for all. And the Seahawks have eaten up so much because they do believe in competition. You could see the undrafted free agents have a better chance with their team than they did with some of the other teams. And when he actually fell to that point, it was almost just, you know, kind of comical. It's like, well, Seahawks are going to get another good one here if you guys are just going to give it away. But I'm happy that you mentioned his lateral quickness. He's got those really long arms. For a guy who's 5'11", he's got arms of a guy who's 6'3", 6'4". And again, just the lateral agility, the initial quickness, the straight line speed, he's got it all. Puna Ford is another reason why people are sleeping a little bit on Seattle's defense. You mentioned Jordan Brooks, that straight line speed again, the instincts again, the production again. This is a defense that is better than their statistics would indicate. And all the players that we're talking about are all under the age of 25. So it's not like this was like last year or the year before was their peak. They should be peaking the next year or two.
Another defensive player that I want to make sure to name drop because I finally had a play happen during the open period that I can talk about. Dunbar has made a few plays at a few of the previous practices, but again, when it's not on live stream, we're not allowed to detail what happens. But this was being streamed on television. Quentin Dunbar came up and laid a big hit on DJ Dallas in the run game. So you finally got to see that physicality that Quentin Dunbar brings. We've talked about this before. Trey Flowers is the one that was formerly a safety, so you would think he's the guy that would be the more assuring tackler, but that has not been the case, at least statistically. Dunbar, according to Pro Football Reference, has had three tackles that he's missed each of the last two seasons. Flowers has missed way more tackles out there on the field. So Dunbar, for being a former receiver, he's going to come up and stick you. And he showed that today against a running back in Dallas that has impressed everybody throughout camp. He hit him and knocked him back, and that was all she wrote. Play over. So that was a big deal. If he starts making more plays like that and he's able to get his hands on a few passes in coverage, the competition is really on with Trey Flowers. Now let's talk offense, because I mentioned at the beginning of this really was an offensive practice, part of it being they were in the red zone. If your offense can't be efficient inside the 20, then something's horribly wrong. You're not doing something right. And they were able to get points on the board today. I know there's been a lot of talk about DK Metcalf. He did score a touchdown today on a fade, and rightfully so. Everybody has the right to talk about this kid because he's turning into a potential superstar right in front of our eyes. But then you've got your old reliable. He's only 28, but Tyler Lockett at this point is your old reliable, the guy that has been outstanding the last couple of years since Doug Baldwin faded out of the picture. And all he did today was have back-to-back touchdowns in the red zone and just his route running savvy on display. You got to feel bad for anybody across from him. Even if he doesn't have the straight line speed that he did before he broke his leg a few years ago, he's made up for it with just how precise of a route runner he is, especially inside the 10-yard line.
Oh my goodness. It really is remarkable. I mean, because when watching Tyler Lockett come out of Kansas State, he was a straight line speed guy. Now, you know, he's got NFL bloodlines. And because of that, I certainly expected him to be a quality route runner, but just the way he sets people up. I mean, the touchdown last year, and I apologize that I don't remember who the opponent was, but it was exquisite. His route running, Russell Wilson's accuracy on that particular touchdown, the way that that Tyler Lockett was able to drag his feet and make that touchdown in the corner of the end zone, you know, guys that are built like Tyler Lockett should not be the guys that you're focusing on the red zone. But when you have that kind of body control, that kind of rapport with the quarterback, you know, and that kind of savvy as a route runner and how to set defenders just to get that sliver of room. We talked earlier about Daryl Turner and the fact that he had four touchdowns in that game. You know, he was known for his straight line speed as well, but what made him so effective, and if you look up his numbers in his first couple of years in the league, he was among the absolute NFL's greatest in terms of touchdowns per reception. I mean, his efficiency was remarkable. Tyler Lockett has a lot of those same type of traits, and fortunately, he's been able to continue to build upon that. So I like how you described it, the old reliable in Tyler Lockett. Even though he isn't that old, he certainly is reliable.
And he's been a guy in that mock game the other day at a couple clutch third down receptions. He's becoming that player that every quarterback has to have, that you just know he's going to get past the marker. He's going to get open. He can get him the football. That's what Tyler Lockett is. He can still take the top off of defense. He's not an old man by any means, but certainly his route running ability has just become enhanced over the last couple of years, and that's just making him that much more of a consistent, reliable target for Russell Wilson. I want to give a shout-out to a few other receivers not named Tyler Lockett or DK Metcalf today as well. David Moore has had a really quiet training camp, and Pete Carroll was asked about him a couple days ago in a presser, and he said he's been impressed with his development on the field. We just haven't seen very much from him. He had a solid day today, though, including catching a corner route touchdown in the end zone during their red zone period. So got to see David Moore come out a little bit. He's just been so wildly inconsistent. If he can have a strong next couple weeks, that's going to help further solidify his standing on this roster, because there's plenty of competition there, notably Freddie Swain. With John Ursua sitting out a good portion of today's practice, I don't know the severity of his injury. He was wearing an ice pack on his leg. Freddie Swain, the rookie out of Florida, took full advantage of that, including scoring a touchdown during that open red zone session. He was working against Marquise Blair in the slot, beat him inside, got a couple steps on him, and caught the touchdown. I believe Geno Smith was the one that threw that. And, you know, everybody's talking about Russell Wilson, how he was spinning it today. He absolutely was. But Geno Smith continues to have a really good camp. He was perfect in that mock game on Saturday, 8 for 8, threw a touchdown to Jacob Hollister. And today, he not only had that touchdown pass to Swain, he also ran for 2 touchdowns during their red zone period. One of them, he outran Shaquem Griffin around the corner. So I think people forget just how good of an athlete Geno Smith is. Even at this stage of his career, he's been around since 2013. He still has plenty of burst when he needs to.
Yeah, and that to me is ultimately the most encouraging thing about all of this, is that we talked about a couple of days ago that how the defense seemed like they had kind of taken the next step. You want to see that competitive fire from the offense. You know that Russell Wilson was certainly just screaming in people's ears about, hey, we've got to step up. And to see that kind of carry down throughout the entire offense, to see lots of players. I mean, I heard some buzz about Penny Hart having a big day. I mean, lots of different guys who are able to kind of jump up and make some splashy plays for you, even going up against the number ones, number twos on defense and all that. That's what's exciting. That's one of the reasons why I really think that we're talking about one of the absolute best teams in the NFL. And I didn't necessarily think that a couple of weeks ago, but I like the way that this team is coming together. And like I said, I think that this is shaping up to be a very exciting season for the Seahawks.
And it wasn't just about the passing game today. There were 3 rushing touchdowns during the open period as well, those short yardage situations. We haven't heard very much about Carlos Hyde up to this point. Brian Schottenheimer name dropped him this morning, saying, hey, I would be remiss not to mention how great of an addition Carlos Hyde is. And today, probably the best practice that he's had for this team, fighting his way into the end zone as much as you can in these practices. They're thud hitting, so they're not bringing him to the ground for the most part, but still running very hard, using his pads as you would expect Hyde is going to do. He scored a touchdown. Travis Homer found the end zone once, and of course, DJ Dallas did as well. So again, this was a very offensive-centric practice, in part because a lot of the action was situational, good chunk of practice being in the red zone, and you saw the offense be much sharper there than what they have been in earlier red zone sessions. So I think that was something that Pete Carroll was really looking to see, especially Brian Schottenheimer as well in offense. Can we be more efficient in those situations? Because they've been kind of inconsistent and have had some struggles in those red zone periods. And for this point, you're starting to see this offense figure things out inside the 20, though, with the weapons they've got. I didn't even mention the tight ends today. You get those guys involved inside the 20s, this is going to be a very difficult offense to slow down in those situations. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on our Wednesday show, the Seahawks have another mock game coming up at CenturyLink Field tomorrow. Rob and I will be breaking down the observations that we are allowed to share with our listeners from that game at CenturyLink Field. Looking forward to talking offense, defense. Hopefully, we have four quarters worth of a scrimmage that we can break down on our Wednesday show. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Go Hawks.